So we are holding on Nun Tes Amud Beis, 7 lines from the bottom. And by the way,
Nun Tes Amud Beis, 7 lines from the bottom?
7 lines from the bottom, yeah. Line begins, my Kasla. We're in the middle of that line. Okay, we're still discussing the various kinds of jewelry and ornaments and whatnot that a woman's not allowed to wear outdoors on Shabbos. We touched briefly on the question, by the way, of whether this applies to men also, and you have poskim who say that maybe it doesn't apply so much to men because women are more prone to take off their jewelry and show it off to their friends, whereas men maybe less so. Anyway, we said in the Mishnah that one of the things a woman is not allowed to wear outdoors, she's not allowed to wear a ring that doesn't have a seal on it. Meaning, in other words, exactly what it sounds like. So you have rings that they may have precious stones like diamonds or pearls or whatever on it. But you have the kind of ring that has a signet on it where you use it to stamp things. And then you have the kind of ring that doesn't. That's just a plain ring without any stamp on it. Now Rashi points out that the kind of ring with a stamp is a ring with a stamp. At least in those days, would usually be the kind of thing that only if you're going to be using it if you're an administrator of a business or of a government agency or something, so you're regularly signing things and sending messengers and whatever. Rashi uses the expression Adam Gadol Mamona, an important person who's in charge of things, so in charge of a business, in charge of some governmental agency or whatever. And women don't usually do that. So the implication is, therefore, that's why we're saying that women are not allowed to wear a signet ring. So the implication, then, of our Mishnah is that if there's no signet on it, then she's proper. It's only also the Rabbanon because she may take it off and show it to her friends. Implying that if there is a signet on it, then she would actually be chayev chata. Which actually, we're going to learn that more explicitly. We're going to learn that more explicitly later on in our Masechta. We're going to deal with that. But the Gemara often does that kind of thing. It'll deduce something from the first statement, even though it could have mentioned it explicitly from the Mishnah later. Also, Rishonim point out there's the fact that the Mishnah later would tell us that she's chayav chatas for one with a signet. We wouldn't know without it that she's potter with one without a signet. Maybe she'd actually be allowed to wear it, and therefore, once we're mentioning our Mishnah, then we're deducing the whole thing from it. Anyway, the point is, Alma lav tachshitu. So evidently, we see that a ring with a signet on it is not considered a tachshit, is not considered an ornament for a woman. Again, because as Rashi says, she doesn't really it's supposed to be functional. And a woman is not going to be doing the kind of thing that requires her to be sealing documents and sending out messengers and whatnot. Unless there's a minu. I have a contradiction though, because the Mishnah says tachshitei noshim tmeim, women's ornaments are makabel tuma, the Elohim tachshitei noshim, and the following are the definition of women's ornaments. For example, katloi, a kapla, which we mentioned yesterday, is either a bib-like thing that they wear around their neck, or we actually had given the other explanation, which was that it was a crescent-shaped thing that she uses to keep the top of her shirt closed. Anyway, that's an example of a woman's ornament. Or nizamim, another example is earrings, the tabois, and rings. And the Mishnah says, "Kabas ben sheyesh alei choisam ben sheein alei choisam." That's true whether this ring has a seal on it or does not. The nizmei ha'af, and also another kind of women's jewelry that makabel tuma are nose rings. So the point is, we see in other words that the Mishnah is mentioning rings with signets and without, that either one of them are considered women's jewelry. So what is it? The Amar of Zera, like Kasha Harab Nechemiah Harabam. So Rav Zera says the answer is that these two Mishnayos, our Mishnah, and the one in Kalim, are talking according to two different Chachamim. Our Mishnah that says that our Mishnah and the next Mishnah and then the later Mishnah that says that a ring with a signet is not a tachshit for a woman, and the one with a signet she'd actually be chayev chata, because we're in Issur D'Oraisa. That would be appointed of Nechemiah, who, as we're going to see in a second, holds that the main thing of the ring is its signet. So, as we're going to see in a second, and therefore he would say that for a woman who doesn't need a signet, then for her it would be carrying on Shabbos, as opposed to Horabonon, who, as opposed to the Mishnah and Kalim, is according to the Rabbanon, according to the Chachamim, who disagree with Reb Nechemiah and say that the main part of the ring is the actual part that goes around the finger. Therefore, they would say whether it has a signet or not, either way, fundamentally, it's something that goes around the finger. Therefore, whether it has a signet or not, either way, we can't say that she's chayav chatas for wearing it. Okay. So where do we see this machlokes? The Tanya. Namely, we learn in a Braisa. Part of this is actually a Mishnah, but the machlokes, in particular the Nechemiah's opinion, you find only in a Braisa. Therefore, Maseiros HaShas says that's why we're quoting the Braisa rather than a Mishnah. Anyway, the Mishnah or the Braisa says, so we learned this before on the days on the days, that we know that metal kalim on the Kabbal Tumah, regardless of their shape, as long as they're functional, as long as they're serving a direct purpose for a human being, then they're Makabal Tumah, whether they're flat or not, and whether they have a clean kibble or not, as opposed to wooden kalim on Makabal Tumah only if they have a receptacle to them. So the Mishnah, the Braisa says, she shomach, because suppose you have a ring which is mainly made out of metal, v'chos mashal almod, but the signet in it is made out of coral, tmeya, that is still makabal tuma, coral grows under the sea, but it grows in the form, some kinds of coral grow in the form of branches. They look like trees, and halacha considers them actually to be a species of tree, even though So scientifically, they come from little undersea organisms that build them up, but halacha considers almud, coral, to be a type of tree. Anyway, so the ring is a kabal tumah. You have a signet in it which is made out of wood, and the wood is not a kli kibble, and then the wood doesn't have a kli kibble, and therefore it shouldn't be a kabal tumah. Doesn't matter. The Tanakhama is saying the main part of the ring is the part that goes around your finger, and that part is made out of metal. Therefore, it's makabal tumah. He shall almud v'chos mishal makos, but if the other way around, if the main body of the ring is made out of coral, and the stamp in it, the seal in it, is made out of metal, tohira, then it's not makabal tumah, because then the main thing of it is considered to be wood, it's considered to be this coral, and it doesn't have a clean kibble, therefore it's not makabal tumah. Tosfos, but actually pointed out before, on the base, it does have a clean kibble because it has a setting on the top of it where you put the stamp into. But since that setting, since that recess over there is meant to be permanently filled with the stamp, then it's not considered to be a clean kibble. A clean kibble would only be something which is you put something in it, and then sometimes you take it out and replace it or whatever, as opposed to here you don't. Anyway, Reb Nechemiah Matameh. Reb Nechemiah says in that second case it would be Tameh because you go according to the signet. And Tosfos points out that Reb Nechemiah would disagree in the Reisha as well. In other words, Reb Nechemiah would say exactly the opposite of the Tanakhama. You Tanakhama are saying that you always go according to the main part, that you always go according to the main part of the ring. So therefore, if the main part is metal, then it's Tameh, and if the main part is coral, then it's Tartar. And Reb Nechemiah says exactly the other way around. You don't go according to the main part, you go according to the stamp, according to the signet. Shahoy Reb Nechemiah Omer, because in fact, Reb Nechemiah used to say, the Tabas Holachas HaChosma, it's not just a ring. Reb Nechemiah says in general, with any kind of Kali, you always go according to decide whether the thing is a Kabbal Tumor or not, you go according to the main functional part of it. So the Tabas Holachacha Choisma, when it comes to a ring, Reb Nechemiah says, you go according to the signet, and therefore, as we said, if the signet is made out of metal, then we don't care what the rest of the ring was made out of. Another example, when it comes to a yoke that you put on an animal's neck, you go according to its pieces that hold it together. So Rashi describes that the kind of yokes that they had in Rashi's time were the kind more that you're that we're familiar with from pictures. Like they have a semicircular cutout on them that goes above the animal's neck, or they themselves to begin with are made curved to fit over the animal's neck. Rashi describes that in the kind of yokes they had in the time of the Gemara weren't like that. Basically the yokes in those times were shaped kind of like a tic-tac-toe. So you'd have two horizontal pieces that go one above the animal's neck and one below it. And then you'd have two vertical pieces that go into holes in them and hold them together. You'd like screw them in place or attach them in place or whatever. So those vertical ones are called, Jashi calls them yesedas, which means pegs. So those pegs are the essential thing of the yoke, because they're what hold it together. Therefore, the Nechemiah says you go according to them. So if all of them are wood, let's say, if all four pieces of the tic-tac-toe are wood, then it's neither here nor there. Then none of them are makabel terum anyway. But let's say, for example, the pieces above and below the animal's neck are wood, and the side pieces that hold them together, these pegs that hold them together, let's say, are metal. Then Reb Nechemiah says the whole yoke would be makabel terum, because the main parts of it, the parts that hold it together, are metal. Another example, Reb Nechemiah says, the koilov, when it comes to a koilov, holach achamas meroisav, then you go according to its nails. Rashi defines a koilov as a display rack. So Rashi describes it. You have a long stick. It's wider on bottom, narrower on top, and you have pegs or nails sticking out all over the place on it. And then you use it. If you're selling belts or you're selling ribbons, then you hang them on it. You have kind of like nowadays, when you go into a store where they sell belts or ties or whatever, you have things like that. So you have display racks exactly like that. Also, people use such things as coat racks or whatever. So again, the same thing. When Nechemiah says, you go according to the nails or the pegs sticking out of it. If the body of the rack is made out of wood and then the pegs are made out of metal, then it's makabel terum. The other way around, it's not makabel terum. Rabbeinu Hanano gives a different explanation that a kolov is some kind of tachshit, some kind of ornament which makes a sound when you wear it, and you use nails to hold it together. Anyway, the point is, again, the nails hold it together, the nails, pegs, whatever hold it together. Therefore, the Nechemiah says you go according to that. The sulam holach achashlibosav, when it comes to a ladder, Reb Nechemiah says you go according to its rungs. So same idea. If you have a ladder where the side pieces of it are wood and the rungs are made out of metal, then it's a makabel terum. And if the other way around, then not. And another example, ba'arsi, when it comes to scales, holach achashal shaloisav, you go according to its chains. Now you think of an old style balance scale. So it's got a horizontal beam, which is what swings back and forth. You have in the middle of it is the fulcrum that it tilts this way and that on that, and then you have attached to each end of that horizontal beam are chains, and attached to the chains are the actual pans of the balance scale on the two sides. So Reb Nechemiah is saying the essential thing in that whole contraption are the chains that hold up the pans, because everything else is just there in order to serve that. So therefore, again, Reb Nechemiah says if the chains are made out of metal, it's makabel terum, and if not, then it's not necessarily makabel terum. So in all those cases, Reb Nechemiah is saying you go according to the main functional part of the case. Whereas the Chachamim say no, you go according to what holds it all together, meaning or not what it stands on. In other words, what it stand, not what holds it together, but what it stands on. Amamin means what makes it stand. So, for example, in the case of the ring, what keeps the signet in place? The fact that it's set into a ring. What keeps the side pieces of the yoke in place? The fact that you have the top and bottom pieces that they're screwed into, and so on and so forth. So therefore, the Chachamim are going to say that in each of those cases, you don't go according to the piece that Reb Nechemiah mentioned, but rather according to a different piece of it, the piece that holds everything up.
So in the case of the balance, it's what. You can say everything is important: the fulcrum, the piece of metal, the chains.
That's true. So actually, when it comes to the balance, right? But when it comes to the balance scale, there's no question the chains and the pans are not the, according to the Chachamim, are not the mamid. They're not what hold everything up. Now, what Rashi means? Now, Rashi mentions that Rashi described over here that. that Rashi describes over here, that it's oruch ma'amidan, and on the surface of it, on the surface, Rashi is saying that the horizontal piece, which is what holds up the chains, which in turn hold up the pans, on the surface, Rashi is saying that part is considered the mamid. Another possible way of explaining Rashi is that actually it means the vertical pole that the whole thing stands on or hangs from or whatever. Anybody, if any of you have an old school Gemara, they have an illustration of it, of this type of balance scale with two different configurations, one where it stands on the ground and the other one where it's hanging from the ceiling. Anyway, which one Rashi means, whether he means that the vertical one or the horizontal one, according to Chachamim, is considered the Mamid, that depends. You have different Gisois in Rashi over here. According to the Bach, for example, according to Hagoyt HaBach, you see on the side over here, he says, V'arso eit kua eit oruch shua kona, shakodin yeta, or whatever. So therefore, it comes out from the Bach that long piece, the one that swings back and forth, the one that has the chains attached to it, would be considered the Mamid.
If you go by the fact that the only piece that cannot be made of wood is the fulcrum,
that's neither here nor there. The fact that you can't make it out of anything else is not a reason to make that the most essential thing. And besides, the fulcrum could be made out of wood, it would just wear out faster.
Exactly.
That doesn't make it the mamid. So the mamid would be one or the other, either the vertical or the horizontal beam of the scales. All right, anyway, the point is the Chachamim are saying, Rav Nechemya would say it's the chains, and the Chachamim are saying it's not the chains, it's some other part of the scale. Anyway, the point is, therefore, so we would assume, so far the Gemara is assuming that the same machlokes of Rav Nechemya and the Chachamim about whether it's metabol tumah or not would also apply then as far as wearing the ring on Shabbos. Rav Nechemya considers the signet to be the main part of the ring, and women don't use signet rings. Therefore, he would say if a woman wears a signet ring on Shabbos, the main thing that she's doing is wearing something that doesn't belong on her finger because she doesn't use signet rings. Therefore, she'd be chayav chatos. Where the Chachamim would say that the main part of the ring is the part that goes around the finger. So, okay, she shouldn't be wearing it on Shabbos, but it's for the same reason as most of the other things we mentioned in our Mishnah, because she may take them off and sell and show it to her friends, not because she would actually be chayav chatos for it. Okay. So that's the first way of understanding the difference between the two Mishnayos. Rabba Amar. Rava says I can give a different answer. What's Dodim Katani? Actually, what you can say is that the Mishnah that we quoted from Kalim that mentioned, where we mentioned women's jewelry, and then we mentioned a ring with or without a signet, Rava says, what's Dodim Katani? The Mishnah is actually describing two different situations. Namely, the Mishnah there in Kalim had said that women's ornaments, and started listing a bunch of things, and it mentioned a ring, but then the Mishnah is saying that actually among rings there are two different kinds. If it has a signet, then it's considered a man's ornament. And if it doesn't, then it's considered a woman's ornament. In other words, Rava is saying you don't have to say that our Mishnah versus the Mishnah in Kalim represent two different opinions, and therefore to say that our Mishnah is only according to the Nechemya. No, actually, the Mishnah in Kalim might also be saying that a ring with a signet is primarily meant for a man, not for a woman. So Tosfos actually says it's not that Rava agrees with Rav Zera that about the machlokes from Nechemya and the Chachamim, and that it's relevant as far as the question whether you can wear it on Shabbos. All it is Rava is saying that you don't have to say that you have two different stam mishnas, one according to Chachamim and one according to Rav Nechemya. So that's it, but Rava would agree, in other words, that Rav Nechemya and the Chachamim do have this machlokes, as we see in the Braita, and that their machlokes is relevant to the question of whether you can wear it on Shabbos. Okay. Rav Nachman Yitzchok says your premise, we have to question your premise in the first place. You're assuming that because of Nehemiah and the Chachamim argue when it comes to Tumah, therefore necessarily they argue when it comes to Hilchos Shabbos. Who said Tumah as Shabbos Taramis? Are you trying to bring a contradiction from the case of Tumah to the case of Shabbos? The difference is Tumah Kli Maisa Amar Achmana. The difference is when it comes to whether something is Makabel Tumah or not, the key thing is it a clean mice? Is it a keli that has a function? That's what the Torah says is the essential thing, whether it's the kabel truma or klihu. So therefore, you could say that even you're going to say maybe you're going to say that a ring with a signet is not considered a woman's tachet, let's say, but nevertheless, it's still definitely considered a keli. Because it definitely has a function because you use it in order to stamp letters and things. As opposed to Shabbos, when it comes to Shabbos, whether you're allowed to wear it or not, Mishum Masu Yom Rachmana, there the Torah says you're not allowed to carry things on Shabbos, and Ein Alei Chosam Tashit. So therefore, you can say if it doesn't have a signet, it can still be considered an ornament. Therefore, Midaraisa, there would be no problem wearing it, and it's only Dirabanan that there's a problem, because she may take it off and show it off to her friends. And again, then you get into the question, would the same thing apply to a man or not? Yeshala, Achoita, Masui, but if it has a stamp, then definitely it would be considered a Masui. Because for a woman the fact that it has a signet means that it's useless for her because she doesn't use signets. So in other words, Rav Nachman Yitzchok is also using Rava's explanation of Ruchzadin Katani, that actually the Mishnah is distinguishing between men and women. The only difference is that Rava had explained that both of them can be considered ornaments, one for a man, one for a woman. Rav Nachman Yitzchok is saying that no, both of them are. We are talking about both of them a woman wearing one type would be considered a tachshit for her, and the other kind would be considered a masa for her. So those are various ways of understanding the difference between our Mishnah and the Mishnah in Canaan. So again, either that, in fact, our Mishnah is according to the Rav Nachemya, and that one is according to the Chachamim, or that Mishnah is mentioning rings in general and then distinguishing the type of ring that a man wears and a type that a woman wears, or saying that both of them are, we are talking about ones that women wear, but we're saying that if it's one without a signet, then it's considered a tachshit for her, and if it's one without a signet, then fine. On weekdays, she might occasionally wear it. It doesn't matter anyway. The point is, whether she wears it or not, it still has a function. Therefore it's makabel tuma. But on Shabbos, she's not allowed to wear it on a daraisa level. Okay. We said in the Mishnah, v'loy b'machat she'ein in the kubah.
Because of the signet, she's not allowed, right?
So with a signet, she's not allowed. So that's what we're saying. So a Mishnah later on in our parak, Daf Samach Beis, says that if she wears one with a signet, she's chayav chatos. So again, according to the first explanation that we had in the Gemara, according to the Zera, we would say that's only correct according to Reb Nechemya, whereas the Chachamim, on the basis of Mishnah and Kalim, would say that she's only also Zerabbanan. Whereas according to Rava's answer, you don't have to say that. You could say that the Mishnah later on that says she's Chayav Chatos for it, and the implication of our Mishnah that also says the same thing could work according to either Reb Nechemya or the Chachamim. Actually, Tosfos says that not. Tosfos says that Rav Nachman Yitzchok would be following Reb Zera's reasoning that in fact that the when we're saying that it should chayev for one with a signet would be only according to Reb Nechemya. So in effect, you know, he's sort of doing the opposite of. He's saying instead of having to say that both Mishnayot go like the Chachamim, the way Rava is, he would say both Mishnayot go like Reb Nechemya. Okay. We said in the Mishnah, the next one, the Loiva Machat Chain in a Kuba, we said another thing a woman is not allowed to wear on Shabbos is a needle without a hole. Now you have a needle with a needle without a hole, meaning basically a pin. So the question is, Lamai Chazya, how would she be using a pin without a hole as an ornament in the first place? The whole point is, we're saying now we're not talking about obviously that she just pins it, that she just sticks it someplace into her clothing and walks out with that on Shabbos. She would in fact be chayav chatas for that, because that's not a normal way of carrying. So evidently we're saying that she's using this pin as some kind of ornament. In what way did she use it? Omar of Yosef, Hoyova Isha Oy Geres Basara. So Rav Yosef says the reason is because the woman gathers up her hair with it. Meaning, so you have, she's wearing a tichel or a hat or what have you, which she has her hair all underneath it, because her hair is not showing. Now you have some hair sometimes sticks out. We learned the other day we have this thing that she might wear on her forehead in order to cover it. But another thing she could do is she could wrap up that hair around the pin and then stick the pin with the hair wrapped around it under her hat. But that way her hair is not showing. This is one of the Gemaras that the Tzemach Tzedek brings as a proof that a woman is not supposed to have any of her hair sticking out under her tichel or what have you, because you see that even if there's a little bit of hair sticking out, then she's doing this whole thing. She's wrapping it around the pin and sticking it under her hair, and then sticking it under her tichel. On the lay Abaya, Abaya says in that case, why should she be also to wear it on Shabbos? That to have it kibiris tahora the tishri. In that case, why don't we say that this pin should have a similar din to a biris, which is tahor, is not makabel toma, and you're allowed to wear it on Shabbos. A biris, we're going to learn later on in the parak, is a garter. A garter is a ring or something that you use to hold up your socks. You know, nowadays socks have elastic, so they stay up by themselves. In those times, they didn't always have that. In those times, they didn't have that at all, actually. They didn't have elastic. So the regular thing, if a person is wearing socks, is they would have a ring of some kind that would wrap around the top part of the sock in order to hold it in place. So therefore, so the Mishnah later on says that such a thing is not makabel tumah because it's not serving the person directly, it's serving the keli, namely the sock, which then serves the person. And therefore, such a thing is not makabel tumah. And she's allowed to wear it on Shabbos because we're not concerned that she's going to take it off to show her friends because then her sock will fall down. So later on in the parak we learn that you're allowed to wear a biris on Shabbos, and also it's not makabel tumah. The fact that it's not makabel tumah is not really relevant to our Gemara over here. The point is that we're just mentioning it because that's the wording of the Mishnah over there. The Mishnah over there starts out Biris Tahora, the Yosin Bar, so therefore in all Gemara over here also it quotes the word Tahora. Anyway, the point is Abaya is saying that the same way as we're saying you're allowed to wear a Biris, you're allowed to wear a garter on Shabbos because it's holding up your socks. And you're allowed to wear it on Shabbos, and we're not concerned that she's going to take it off and show it to her friends. The same thing that should be mutter over here with this pin that she wraps her hair around, because the same thing, she needs it for tzniyos, because she needs to keep her hair covered. So she's not going to take out the pin on Shabbos and show it off to her friends. So what's the problem? Ela tirgumer of Adar Narshar Kamedir of Yosef. Rather, Rav Adar Narshar, Rav Adar from Neresh, the name of a place in Babel, explained in front of Rav Yosef what we're talking about, a pin a needle that doesn't have a hole in it, when we're saying that she's not allowed to wear it on Shabbos, we're not talking about that kind that she wraps her hair around. We're talking about Hoyol V'isha Chilekes Basa'ara. We're talking about the kind of pin that she uses to part her hair. So that's the kind that she's not allowed to wear on Shabbos. So the question is, the Shabbos l'may chazya? Well, in that case, what's the hava amina that she could wear it on Shabbos? On Shabbos, Rashi learns she's not allowed to part her hair. Now, we're going to talk in a second. Tosfos addresses that issue and discusses the question, is she in fact allowed to part her hair on Shabbos? But anyway, the Gemara is asking, so if that's the case, if on Shabbos she's anyway not parting her hair, Then what would she be using it for on Shabbos? How would it be considered part of her clothing, in other words, or jewelry or whatever? The answer is Omar Rabbah, Tas Shal Zahav Yesh La'al Rosha. This kind of pin, it's not just a pin that has a blunt end and a sharp end. On the blunt end, actually, there's a golden plate. Therefore, on weekdays, she uses the sharp end, the pin end, to part her hair. On Shabbos, she'll put it, she'll stick it into her hat. She'll stick it into her hat or whatever, and then the plate on the blunt end of it will be on her forehead as an ornament, as a piece of jewelry. So therefore, again, as jewelry, it should be mutter for her to wear it on Shabbos on a Zaraisa level. But midrabbanan, we don't want her to because she might take it off and show it off to her friends.
What do you mean exactly by parting her hair?
Exactly what it sounds like. You know what it means to part your hair. You have your hair grow. Your hair comes down from your hair. Your hair grows on your head in one direction and another. So you have a woman, think of it. You see women with their hair parted, right? Some of their hair going in one direction and some in the other direction. And you have the white. You have the area of the scalp in the middle where you can see where. In Chassidus, by the way, Rabbi Kabbalah talks about in many places. You have this thing that's called lavnunis, that the mehairs grow from it, and it represents like the rust and the elyon from which all the individual mitzvahs derive. But yes, that's what parting your hair means.
But you're allowed to make a woman is allowed to make a bun on Shabbos.
No. We're not talking about making a bun. We're talking about parting her hair. And actually, no. Rashi is saying that she's not allowed to part her hair on Shabbos. That's what Tosfos has a bunch of questions on Rashi.
Rashi
doesn't say why she's also to part her hair on Shabbos. And in fact, Tosfos has a bunch of questions on Rashi, among others, why should she be also to part her hair on Shabbos? You're going to say, is it because she might accidentally pull out hair while she's parting? So what? It's a malacha shen and tzurcha legufa. And we know, it's a dove shen and a scaven. And we know already from many places in the Masechta that a dove shen and a scaven is mutter.
According to Reb Shimon.
Fine, the halacha is like Reb Shimon in that. So why is our Stam Mishnah saying that it would be Osir? Also, Tosfos says, what's the answer? Because she uses it to part her hair. So what? And by the same logic, if a person has, let's say, something that they use, let's say, for example, a person has a handkerchief that they use to blow their nose, you're still not going to say that they're allowed to carry that handkerchief on Shabbos because they might use it to blow their nose. It's not considered a tachshit. So what's the haba? I mean, that because she uses it to part her hair, therefore it should be considered a tachshit.
Right.
So therefore, Tosfos learned the whole Gemara a little bit differently. Tosfos learned that the question was, why in general does a woman wear such a thing on a weekday? Forget about on Shabbos. What would be the purpose of wearing such a pin on a weekday? And Rav Yosef says because she uses it to wrap up her hair, or actually Tosfos learned differently. A geres basa'ara means not like Rashi says she wraps the loose hair that's sticking out of her tichel in it around the needle and sticks it in. Rather, Tosfos learned that what it means is she sticks the pin into her hat and uses it to pin her hat more carefully to her head so that the hair doesn't fall out in the first place. So therefore, that's why Tosfos says, that's why Abaya compares it to a garter, because it serves exactly the same function to the hat as a garter does to the sock. It keeps it from falling off. Anyway, so therefore, Abaya is asking, in that case, then what should be the problem if she's sticking it into her hat to help hold her hat in place? So Tosfos says, what the Gemara is answering is that first the question is, what is she doing with this needle? It can't be that she's using it to hold her hat in place, because then in fact she should be allowed to wear it on Shabbos, same way as you're allowed to wear a garter on Shabbos. So the first answer of the Gemara is that on weekdays she uses it to part her hair. So that's in general. So the question is not why. The question is not why is it a tachshit. The question is, What is she using it for in general? What does she do with such a needle in the first place? And second of all, if we say the only reason is because she parts her hair with it, then the question is, why b'chlal is it a tachshit if it should be, again, no different than a handkerchief, let's say. And the answer is, again, because it has this and the answer is because it has this golden plate on the end of it that can be used as a tax sheet. So it kind of comes out then that Tosfos is understanding the second question of the Gemara, the sort of the way that Rashi understood the first question. The Gemara had started asking, well, my Kazia, what is a meal without a hole suitable for? And Rashi had explained that what b'chlal does she use it for? And the answer was, he said, because because she uses it to, and we ended up saying because she uses it to part her hair. And then the question was, in that case, on Shabbos, when she can't part her hair, what do you use it for? Tosfos is learning that, no, there's no problem parting hair on Shabbos. During the week, she uses it to part her hair, but on Shabbos, that wouldn't be reason enough to bechlal be able to wear it. Same way as you can't wear any functional item on Shabbos unless it's either clothing or an ornament. And the answer is, because it is an ornament, because it has this golden plate on one end of it. Okay. So that's that's why the Mishnah is saying that she can't wear it, that she can't wear it on Shabbos, because again, even though it's an ornament, it's like most of the other ornaments in our Mishnah, we're concerned that she might take it off and show it off to her friend. The Mishnah says, next, okay, so now we've talked about things that women aren't allowed to wear. Now let's talk about things that a man is not allowed to wear. I mean, the things we're going to mention in our Mishnah also apply to women, but the difference is the ones in the previous Mishnah only apply to women because men don't wear that kind of jewelry. These ones apply equally well to men. So the Mishnah says, Lo yeta ish besandal hamasumah. Again, we're still talking about things that are also dirabanan, things that are also daraisa, we're going to get to in the next Mishnah. So a man is not allowed to go out on Shabbos with a sandal that has nails that stick out of the bottom of it. So Rashi describes this kind of sandal is made like this. The bottom piece of it, the sole, is made out of a piece of wood. Then you have leather straps that go around the top part of it that you stick your foot into. And you have nails that are used to hold it together, and the heads of the nails stick out on the bottom side of the shoe. So you think of an example you could have nowadays sort of is like the shoes that baseball players wear, for example, that have cleats on the bottom, so this way they can grip the dirt more easily when they're running. That would be vaguely similar to the sandal on the sumer that you're talking about over here. Anyway, so you're not allowed to wear that on Shabbos for reasons that we're going to discuss in the Gemara. The loybid yochid, you're also not allowed to wear one shoe. Bizmancha in Baragle Maka, unless the person has a wound on his foot. So what's the problem with wearing one shoe? So Rashi gives two reasons. One from the Yoshami, people are going to think that he's carrying the other shoe, so it's going to be Marisayan. And the other reason is, because the other reason that Rashi brings from his Rebbeim, because people are going to laugh at him. Look at the silly guy walking around with one shoe, so he's going to get embarrassed and he's going to take off the shoe and carry it in Rosh Hashanah. But if one foot is hurt, then he's allowed to, because then obviously he's only wearing one shoe because of that. Sort of like nowadays when you have a person has a cast on one foot and they wear only one shoe on the other foot. We'll actually see it in the Gemara tomorrow when it's saying that you're allowed to wear a single shoe on a foot when a person's foot is hurt. Do we mean that he wears it on the shoe that on the foot that has that has the wound or the other one? We'll see it in the Gemara tomorrow. Anyway. Continues the mission of the loyd tefillin. A person is also not allowed to go out on Shabbos wearing tefillin. The loyd kameya b'zman she'ena min amuncha. He's also not allowed to be wearing on Shabbos a kameya, an amulet, when it's not made by an expert or it's not known to have expert and effective powers. So we're going to discuss that point. We're going to discuss that point in the Gemara tomorrow, Best Hashem on Samach Aleph. How exactly we know when this kameya is effective and when not. We discussed this concept briefly in the previous paragraph in connection with animals. We said sometimes they make kameyas for animals in order to heal them. In this case, it's a kameya made for a person. It could contain names of Hashem or names of Malachim, and we know various famous characters and various famous Rabbanim in Jewish history who wrote such kameyas. It could be that it has herbs in it. Whatever it is, it works by it, how it works. It's not something that's medically, it's not something that medical science can explain, but you have ones that are known to work, and those kind you're allowed to wear on Shabbos because it's a tachshit. But if it's not, then it's not considered a tachshit. Okay. The loy b'shuyin, another thing you're not allowed to wear on Shabbos is a coat of armor. The kind that a person wears into battle, for example. The leba kasta, or a helmet, again, of the kind that you wear to go into battle. The leba magafayim, or army boots. The imyasa, now if a person goes out with Shabbos wearing any of those things, and he's not chayav chatas, because after all, they are fundamentally a kind of clothing, and it's only the drabbanon that they're also. In the case of the army equipment, it's also because it may look like he's going to war. It's also because it's going to look like he's going to war on Shabbos when he's not supposed to. Obviously, if it's a case where you are fighting a war on Shabbos, and a case where you're allowed to up yalacha, then I suppose you would be allowed to wear these equipment. Which, by the way, as opposed to, we're going to learn later on Daf Samach Gimel, we're going to talk about the actual weapons themselves are not considered clothing, and those actually a person wears them on Shabbos, it would be considered carrying. But here we're talking about
the
what?
That's what the Habamina with tefillin. Tefillin looks on Shabbos.
What's the Habamina with tefillin?
Yeah, the looks on Shabbos.
So we're going to talk about that in the Gemara tomorrow. We're going to talk about
the Bechlal.
I mean, you have the question. First of all, even if tefillin are mukta, Bechlal, you have a machloikas in a few places in Shas, whether Shabbos is man tefillin or not. Is Shabbos a time for wearing tefillin? And we're going to learn in the Gemara tomorrow that actually, even if we say that Shabbos is man tefillin, there's still a reason not to wear them on Shabbos. But anyway, the point is that if we say you're not supposed to wear them on Shabbos, okay, so they're mukta, but the point is they're still considered a malbush on a daraisa level. They're still considered clothing or an ornament or whatever. So therefore, he's not going to be chayav chatos for wearing them on Shabbos.
I think we learned also that if he found it somewhere, an open field with the Zayin, that's a different story. All right.
That's the beginning of the 10th parak of Erevin talks all about that. We'll get to that session time next year. Sandal on the summer, my timer. Why shouldn't you be allowed to wear the sandal on the summer on Shabbos, the sandal with nails or cleats or whatever sticking out from the bottom of it? So Shmuel says, because of a very sad story that happened. There were people who had escaped from a gzera, and gzera, by the way, is a change of the censors. At some point in history, the censors decided they didn't like the word shmad, because they know good and well what a shmad is, and they didn't like us talking about what they did to us. So therefore, they changed it to gzera. But there's supposed to be shalfei hashmad hoyu. These are people. There was a situation where people are escaping from a shmad, where at one point, or many points in history, the Goyim outlawed various mitzvahs of Yiddishkeit. There were people who were hiding out in the cave to be able to keep mitzvahs secretly. The Omru, so they said, that they when they're hiding out in this cave, anybody who wants to come in and join us in the cave and be able to continue keeping mitzvahs secretly, we welcome them in. But we don't want anybody to go out. Because if you go out, there might be enemies around. You're not going to realize, and then they're going to see you coming out, and they're going to realize where the hideout is. So you have these Jews are hiding out in a cave in order to be able to still learn Torah and in order to keep mitzvahs. And so it happened one time, nefach sandolei shel echad mehen, one person who was in this cave one time accidentally put on his shoes backwards. Now, the kind of sandals that we're describing over here, as Rashi had said, you basically have the bottom of them, the sole of them is a piece of wood, and then you have straps that go from the left side and from the right side and go over the top of the sandal in order to hold it onto your foot. It is possible to put onto the thing backwards. You put in your foot from the wrong end. And what happened was, when people saw the footsteps from that backwards shoe, from that backwards sandal in the dirt. They thought Echa Mehen Yotza. They thought that one. They thought that somebody had left the cave who wasn't supposed to, and they got nervous for the Uhu Oivim. They got nervous that their enemies, the Romans or whoever it is, may have seen them. The Asha Boyin Aleihem, and they started panicking that now the Goyim are going to come and attack them. So they started pushing one against the other, as unfortunately happens in a panic. And they killed among each other more even than the enemies killed of them. So Rashi explains they actually, when they were pushing against each other in the panic, they ended up, again, these shoes have these nails on the bottom of them. They're very heavy, and they're very effective weapons. So they didn't do it on purpose, but in the panic, they ended up trampling each other and with these shoes that had these nails on them. So because of that, the Chachamim asked to wear such shoes on Shabbos. We're going to see soon why the Chachamim limited it to Shabbos. So that was the reason, because of this tragedy that happened with these hobnailed sandals.
This story happened on Shabbos.
So actually, the Gemara is going to point out soon that it happened on Shabbos. Yeah.
Okay.
In fact, the Ben Yehoyada has an interesting verse on it. He says we're saying we're not supposed to wear them on Shabbos because of this tragedy, and because, in other words, therefore the Meiri explains that the Chachamim don't want people are going to wear such things on Shabbos, and then it's going to remind them of that tragedy, and it's going to destroy the Simcha of Shabbos. But the Ben Yehoyada actually has an interesting verse on it. He says also what happens is when you can't wear these on Shabbos, then you're going to ask, so why not? We wear these during the week. What's wrong with wearing them on Shabbos? You're going to mention this story, and that way you're going to remember the Mesiras Nefesh of these Jews who hid out of these caves to keep Shabbos and keep other mitzvahs. Anyway, continues the Gemara. Rabbi Loi ben Elazar Omer, the Ma'ara Hayu Yashvin. Rabbi Loi ben Elazar tells the story a little bit different. The problem wasn't that somebody carelessly put on his shoe upside down or backwards. What happened was the Ma'ara Hayu Yashvin, these Jews were again hiding out in the cave. They heard a sound from above the cave, and in particular, Tosfos says the sound they heard was the sound of these kinds of shoes, with nails on them. That they thought that their enemies are attacking. So they thought that the enemies are coming to attack them, especially because actually the Roman soldiers used to regularly wear such kinds of sandals or such kind of boots with these nails on them. So therefore, when you hear the sound of sandals with those nails on them, your first instinct is going to be that it's the Romans coming to attack. So again, they thought the Jews underneath, inside the cave, thought that the Goyim are coming to attack them. And again, they started panicking and pushing one against the other. And they ended up killing one among the other more than the enemies killed of them, as Rashi says, with these spikes on the bottom of their shoes. It wasn't even necessarily if the enemies were actually there. In the first story, they panicked because they saw the shoe prints backwards, and they thought somebody had left and jumped to conclusions. The same way over here. It's not even necessarily if there were enemies over there, but they heard somebody upstairs above the cave walking around with sandal hamasumer, and they jumped to conclusions that it was Roman soldiers. So, because of that, the Chachamim said not to wear it on Shabbos in order not to destroy the Simcha of Yom Tov. The Yerushalmi actually has a frightening expression about it. The Yerushalmi says that these kind of sandals with nails in them were, after a while, it became such a symbol of these kinds of tragedies, and this is kind of terror from the Roman soldiers that women would see such sandals and miscarry from panic, from fear. And a third version of the story, Rami by Yecheskel, the Beit HaKnesses are Yoshin. Rami by Yecheskel says they weren't hiding out in a cave. They were sitting in shul. The Shomu Kol Ma'achoda Beit HaKnesses. They heard a sound from behind the shul, again, of people walking around that sounded like enemies coming. Kisvurin Hoyu Shabora Aleim Oyvim. They thought the enemies are coming to attack them, and they started panicking. Dachu Zebazeh. They started pushing one against the other. Vahogu Zezeh Yosu Masha Hogaman Oyvim. And they ended up killing one among the other more than the enemy killed. So in any case, after these various stories, so the Chacham said that a person is not allowed to wear a sandal on a sumo on Shabbos. Because again, because it'll destroy the simcha of Shabbos.
What about the fact that you cannot be harmed because you're doing a mitzvah? How does that stand with these stories?
The Gemara mentions in a few places, Hecha b'shchiyah hazeka shayim. Where there's a clear and present danger, then that doesn't necessarily apply. Over here, when you have a bunch of people in a cave, or in shul hiding out from their enemies or whatever, it's very easy for a panic to start. That would be an example of shchiyah hazeka. So unfortunately, they panicked and this ended up happening. But you can't rely in that case that the course of the mitzvah is going to protect you. You have to, I guess the idea is we're saying they should have taken steps to make sure that panics like that don't start, and they didn't realize to, unfortunately. So the question is, Yehochi b'chil nami l'tzar. In that case, why are we only asking to wear such a thing on Shabbos? We should ask for it on weekdays as well. I mean, according to Rashi, especially, that the killing was actually done with the spikes, that it should be equally well also on weekdays. And according to the various other answers, okay, fine, on weekdays there's no Simchas Shabbos, but fine. If we're saying, for example, that Yerushalmi is mentioning that pregnant women would see these things and miscarry from fear, then why is it not also on weekdays as well? But the answer is, the Gemara says, the Shabbos habit, because the original story happened on Shabbos. So it's not so much, in other words, the Chachamim are concerned that this thing might happen again, because then, you'd have to ask for it on weekdays as well. The problem is, again, the Chachamim are concerned that it's going to destroy the Simcha of Shabbos, because you're going to see somebody wearing it on Shabbos, and it's going to ruin the Simcha of Shabbos. So therefore, the Chachamim said not to wear it on Shabbos. The Yerushalmi actually gives a different interesting reason, which is that the Yerushalmi says in those times, people didn't regularly have separate shoes for weekdays and Shabbos. People usually had one pair of shoes that they wore all week long. So all the Chachamim have to do is say, don't wear them on Shabbos, and automatically, therefore, people in general are not going to be wearing them on weekdays either. Okay. Anyway, so the Gemara asks, okay, so if you're saying that it was that the story happened on Shabbos, and therefore you're not allowed to wear them on Shabbos, but you're allowed to wear them on weekdays, in that case, the Yom Tov Lishtudi, in that case, it should be mutter to wear them on weekday, on Yom Tov, because Yom Tov is not Shabbos after all. Alamatnan, in that case, why do we learn to the contrary in a Mishnah in Masechta Beitza? The Mishnah says, Meshalchin Kalim Yom Tov, you're allowed to send Kalim, or clothing, or whatever, as a present to somebody else on Yom Tov, Bein Tfurin, Bein She'enim Tfurin, whether the clothes are sewn up or not, because if they're sewn up, if they're finished and ready to use, he can wear them on Yom Tov, and even if not, he can always use them to sit on or whatever, if it's just unsewn pieces of cloth. So you're allowed to send them as a present to somebody on Shabbos, because it helps with Simchas Yom Tov. The person is happy to receive a present on Yom Tov. So you're allowed to do that. Avaloi sandal amasumer, but continues the Mishnah, you're not allowed to send on Yom Tov the sandal amasumer, these sandals that have these nails sticking out of them. Veloi minol she'en a topper b'Yom Tov, you're also not allowed to send them on Yom Tov a shoe that's not sewn up, because clothing that's not sewn up you can still use. You can still use the pieces of cloth to spread on a chair or something and sit on it. But a shoe that's not sewn together, there's nothing you can do with it on Yom Tov. So the point is, therefore, so obviously the implication is you can't wear a sandal on a sumo on Yom Tov. Otherwise, you would be allowed to send it to the person on Yom Tov, same as any other clothing. So therefore, so why not? What's wrong with sending it on Yom Tov? What's wrong with wearing it on Yom Tov? Yom Tov is not Shabbos. Now, Tosfos at the bottom of Omer Aleph points out that the Gemara there explains that you're allowed to, for example, the Gemara says you're allowed to send tefillin on Yom Tov, even though you don't wear tefillin on Yom Tov, because since you can use it on weekdays, then therefore you're allowed to send it to somebody as a present on Yom Tov, because it'll enhance Simchas Yom Tov that he got a present, even though he can't wear it on Yom Tov itself. But in that case over here, so you could wear these sandal on the sumah on weekdays. Why shouldn't you be allowed to send it on Yom Tov? The Tosfos says actually the reason is what we're saying is that the sandal on the sumah is the Chachamim made an extra gzeira on it because of this tragedy that happened that we described before. Therefore, the Chachamim don't even want you sending it on Yom Tov. Unlike, for example, you're allowed to send tefillin on Yom Tov, even though you don't wear tefillin on Yom Tov, and you even have Rishonim who learn that it's also to wear them on Yom Tov. You're allowed to send them. You're allowed to send them as a present on Yom Tov because it enhances Simchas Yom Tov, as opposed to a sandal on a sumer doesn't enhance Simchas Yom Tov. Just the opposite. It ruins it because it reminds everybody of these tragedies that happen. So the point is, you obviously can't wear them on Yom Tov, and they're so off limits that you can't even send them as a present on Yom Tov. So why not? If the story happened on Shabbos, why are we outlawing them on Yom Tov? So the answer is, the Gemara says, because after all, the Gemara answers the question with another question. The Shabbos my timer, after all, why are we asking it on Shabbos? The Ikka Knufia, because everybody gathers together in shul, because on Shabbos you can't do malacha, so therefore you have larger numbers of people come to shul than they do during the week, and therefore it's similar to what happened over there when you had all those Jews gathered in the cave or in the shul or whatever. Well, the Yom Tov Nami Ikka Knufia. The Yom Tov is the same as Shabbos. In that sense, you also have a lot of people gathered together for the same reason, because you don't do malacha on Yom Tov. So therefore, it's also a similar kind of situation. So what the Chachamim did is they didn't say it's also in general on weekdays when you don't have large gatherings of people. The Chachamim only asked them to wear the sandal in the summer on days when there are large gatherings. So the question is, Tainus Tzibur Ikka Knufia. Well, then you have another kind of case on weekdays when there is a large gathering, namely a Tainus Tzibur. You have when they're fasting because of there's no rain or because of an epidemic or whatever. So you also have people are gathering together, and we never find that you're not allowed to wear a sandal on a summer on those days. Okay, the answer is the Gemara says Maisa can have the Knufya de Isura. Okay, but these stories, when they had these panics and they ended up trampling each other, etc., happen on days when they're gathered together on a day when they're also to do malacha. As opposed to on a tiny sibber is a day when you're allowed to do malacha. So therefore, it's not similar enough to the original case that the Chachamim should extend the Isser to him. So the surface meaning of the Gemara over here is that the Chachamim only wanted to make the Gzeira in general. When the Chachamim make Gzeiras, they usually make it on something that's fairly similar to the original situation. In other words, we should say like this. There are Gzeiras the Chachamim make because, for example, they're concerned that a person might confuse one thing with another. So those the Chachamim can make very broad Gzeiras. But you have something like this, where there's a particular incident that happened because of which, in commemoration of which, or to be careful of, not so much commemoration, but in order to be careful that this kind of situation doesn't happen again, the Chachamim make a Gzeira. That kind of Gzeira, usually the Chachamim make, the Chachamim don't make it so broadly as the saying, for example, so they don't want to make it that on weekdays you shouldn't be allowed to wear a sandal on a summer. It's enough to make it that it shouldn't, that on days that are similar to the original one, then you shouldn't. Then you're not allowed to wear the sandal on the summer. So what are days similar to the original one? Is days when people are gathered together in large numbers and they can't do malacha, namely Shabbos and Yom Tov. So that would exclude fast days. Again, you have the reason that the Rishonim bring. Because if you're wearing them on Shabbos or on Yom Tov, it'll destroy the Simcha of Shabbos or Yom Tov because it'll remind everybody of the tragedy. Well, on a tiny sibur, that's not an issue. Now, the Gemara is going to bring in this connection another example of a situation where you had a particular incident happen and the Chachamim made a Gzeira because of it. You have like this. The Mishnah in Masechta Parah and a Gemara on it in Masechta Chagiga describes a situation where one time, so we know that everything involved with the Parah Adumah has to stay strictly Tahar. So you had so describes that one time you had a situation. The Mishnah describes the dinim. The Gemara describes the story behind it. That one time they were carrying paradruma water mixed with the ashes of the paradruma. One time they were bringing it across the Yarden in a ship. And later on they were checking the ship, and they found that in the bottom of the ship there was a kazayis of a dead body. So that means everything that was in the ship became tummy. It means the paradruma water also became tummy. So therefore, the Chachamim made a gzera from then on that you're not allowed to carry paradruma water, you're not allowed to carry mechatas, you're not allowed to take it across the water in a ship or on a bridge or various other ways, make it float across the water. The only thing you can do, according to the Chachamim, is you can walk across the river and hold the mechatas in your hand. And also, they said this apply. Now, this story happened with a boat that was crossing the Yarden, and the Chachamim said the din, we're applying the din not only to the Yarden but also to other rivers as well. Whereas Chanina ben Akiva disagrees and says that no, given that the original story happened with a boat in the Yarden, then only a boat and only in the Yarden is going to be altered. Other kinds of ways of crossing a body of water, such as a bridge or other rivers, even in a boat, Rav Chanina ben Akiva says wouldn't be a problem. So now we have to figure out over here, according to Rav Chanina ben Akiva, according to the Chachamim, then we understand once you make gzeira on a boat, then we extend it to other ways of crossing the water. And once we're saying it applies to the Yarden, then it applies to other rivers. The same way, once the Chachamim said that the gzeira of Sanda on the Sumer applies on Shabbos, again, because the original story happened on Shabbos, then it's easy enough to say that it also applies to Yom Tov, because Yom Tov is like Shabbos. It's a day when people are assembling in large numbers and not doing melacha. But what about a coincidence of Chanina ben Akiva? He says, in the case of the Parah Dribble water, that you make the gzeira very, very narrowly. So the same thing over here. We should make it very narrowly, only on Shabbos. So the Gemara says, no. The Afilu of Chanina ben Akiva, the Amalei Osu, Eleba Yazin, the Raskinu, Chamayit HaShahoya. No, even if Chanina ben Akiva, who says in that case that we only ask it when it's a boat crossing the Yarden and no other way of going across the water and no other river because that's the way the story happened. Okay, he would say, Hanimili Yarden, he would say the difference is because of the Yarden, the shiny Mishar Naharis. The Yarden is recognizably different than all the other rivers. So in other words, when you think about it, it's wider, it's deeper than most rivers in Eretz Yisrael are not real rivers because they don't run all the time. They run in the summer, they run in the winter, but not in the summer or whatever. The Yarden is the only real permanent river in Eretz Yisrael. So Rav Chanina ben Akiva says in that case, then that's distinct enough from the other rivers that we don't have to extend the gzeira to other rivers. And the same thing, a boat is also different. It is also different than other kinds of things across the water. But Yom Tov and Shabbos, after all, are basically the same thing. It's not, as we learn in the Mishnah, Ein ben Yom Tov v'Shabbos elo oichol nefesh bovad, that the only fundamental difference between Yom Tov and Shabbos is that you're allowed to do melechus oichol nefesh on Yom Tov. So therefore, in other words, basically, Yom Tov is similar to Shabbos. And even though, I mean, the halacha is like the tilul, as we know, that once you're allowed to do those malachas for oichol nefesh, you're allowed to do them for other purposes, but still, you have, it's only because of oichol nefesh. Other than that, it's only malachas that are related to oichol nefesh that are also, all the other malachas are still just as also on Shabbos and on Yom Tov. So even Rav Chanina ben Akiva would agree, therefore, that Yom Tov is similar enough to Shabbos. And therefore, what zera that applies to Shabbos, as far as Simon on the Sumer, would apply to Yom Tov as well. Okay. Now let's deal with the exact parameters of this din about Sandal on the Sumer. What kind you're allowed and not allowed to wear? Amar of Yehuda Amashmu, Loishanu Ela Lachazit. This that we're saying that you're not allowed to wear a sandal on a summer is where the nails are in there in order to strengthen it. Because as we said, what we mean is, in other words, that you have the wooden sole, you have the leather straps that go from the bottom of the sole and wrap around the top of it, and your foot goes into it. So typically on a sandal on a summer, the nails are there in order to hold it all together. So that would be the kind that's also. avalanoi, but if you put nails into the shoe for decoration, then mutter, then it would be allowed to wear it on Shabbos, because that's not the kind where the story happened with, and therefore that would be mutter. The kamalanoi. So the question is, okay, if you're putting them in only for decoration, up to how many are you allowed to have and still wear it on Shabbos? Rabbi Yechanan says five on each sandal. But Rav Chanina says seven on each one, but no more than that. If you have any more than that, then it's not Lanoi anymore. Omer Rav Yechanan Rav Shaman Ba'aba, Asbar Allah, he says, let me explain to you why I'm saying five and Rav Chanina is saying seven. Lididi, as far as I hold, the reason is because you have like this. If you have, why you're only allowed up to five, Stein Mikan, what you would do is you would put two nails on each side of the shoe, two on the outer side, one by the toe end and one by the heel end, and the same thing on the inner side, so that's four. The achas b'tausiyosa, and one at the bottom, in the middle over there where the straps are attached to the shoe. Tausiyosa means the straps. And according to Rav Chanina, the reason why he allows seven is because he's saying gimel mikan v'gimel mikan, the achas b'tausiyosa, because he'd say that you can have three on each side. You can have one on the outer side of the shoe closer to the toe, one in the middle, one at the end by the heel, the same thing on the inner side of the shoe, and then one in the middle where the tausiyosa attach. So that's why you have five or seven respectively. Okay. The Gemara asked Macy, I have a contradiction on Rabbi Yechanan. The Braisa says, sandal hanoite, if you have a sandal which is uneven, so one side of it is higher than the other, and therefore you want to put nails into the lower side in order to raise it up. So nowadays you put a shoe insert or something. In those days you would put nails into the bottom of it. So oiseloi sheva, you're allowed to make as many as seven nails in it, give it of nothing, and you're still allowed to wear it on Shabbos. Rebbe must be a gimel. Rebbe says you would be allowed to put as many as 13. So b'shleimah l'Rav Chanina who da'amah k'Rav Nosson. So Rav Chanina, no problem. Rav Chanina who says that you can have seven is agreeing with Rav Nosson who says that you can also have seven. El Rav Yechanan da'amah k'man. But Rav Yechanan, when he says that you can only have five, is which Tana is he going like? The Gemara is not assuming at this point that there's any difference between whether it's noiter or not. Later on, we're going to revisit that point. But right now, the Gemara is assuming there's no difference between a sandal that's uneven and one that's not. Either way, there's a maximum number of nails you're allowed to have in it before it's considered a sandal hamasuma. The answer is, Huda Amak Reb Nahiroi. The answer is, Rabbi Yechanan is following the opinion of Reb Nahiroi, who is also a Tana. The Tanya Reb Nahiroi, Hey, Mutter v'sheva also. Reb Nahiroi says five are Mutter, seven are also. So there you go. Reb Yechanan goes according to that. Okay. Eifa l'Rav Babachana. So in this connection, Eifa, that was his name, says that Eifa was one of the Chachamim living in Babel. Rashi brings that he was the son of Rachva from Kupadis. So it was mentioned in a few places in Shas. Anyway, so he says to Rav Babachana, Asun Talmidei Rabbi Yechanan, you Chachamim of Eretz Yisrael, being that you're Talmidim of Rabbi Yechanan, Avidu ki Rabbi Yechanan, you follow Rabbi Yechanan because he's your local Rav, and so you have to follow him. Anan, whereas we who live in Babel, Neved ki Rabbi Chanina, we're going to follow Rabbi Chanina, who says that you're allowed up to seven. In other words, the point is he's saying that Rabbi Chanina is actually greater than Rabbi Yechanan. Rabbi Chanina, as we learned yesterday, was the Rosh Hashiva some years after Rebbe passed away. Rabbi Yechanan is the next generation. But, so he's saying that technically the halacha ought to be like Rav Chanina everywhere, but because you guys are, so Rabbi Nachman explains that what Eifa is saying is, technically the halacha should be everywhere like Rav Chanina, because he's Rabbi Yechanan's Rebbe, but you guys, and it's true, I'll listen, because you learn from Rabbi Yechanan, and then therefore you have to follow Rabbi Yechanan. But wherever we're not talmidim of Rabbi Yechanan, we're entitled to follow Rabbi Chanina, being that he's Rabbi Yechanan's Rebbe, and the halacha should be like him. Okay. Bamine Rav Huna Mer Rav Ashi. So in this connection, Rav Huna asks Rav Ashi, Chomesh Mahu, if you have five nails in the shoe, in the sandal, what's the din? Are you allowed to wear it on Shabbos? So the Rashi says you'd be allowed to even if it's seven. Because like Rav Nosson, and like Rav Chanina. So he asked him, Teishamai, what if it has nine nails in it? Actually, even eight would be also. In other words, seven is the maximum. Now, usually, the point is, usually they would have them in odd numbers. Because again, usually you have a certain number on one side of the shoe and a certain number on the other, and then one in the middle where the straps go. So therefore, that's why Rav Huna was asking about odd numbers, seven or nine, respectively. And when Rav Ashi says even eight are also, he means seven is the absolute maximum. So another question in that connection. Bominei ha'hurat onam Rav Ami, a certain shoemaker asked Rav Ami, tofren b'fnim mahu, what would be the din if you sew a layer of leather inside the sandal? So the sandal itself, as we said, just has a wooden bottom and leather strap. So what happens if you sew a piece of leather inside it, which makes it more like a shoe? Amalei mutter, and then it has nails on the bottom of it. Are you allowed to wear it on Shabbos? Amalei, so Rav Ami answers mutter. I did learn from my Rebbeim that it is mutter. V'lo yadainim, from Rav Yechanan, Rashi says. The timer, but I don't know what the reason is. Why should that be different than a regular sandal on the tumma? Amar Rav Ashi, v'lo yadamar my timer. So Rav Ashi says to him, really, you don't understand the reason? The reason is, given the tougher in the frame, once you sew this piece of leather on the inside of it, have a lamino, then it becomes a different kind of footwear. Now it's not a sandal anymore. Now it's a shoe, because that's essentially the difference, is that a sandal was made out of hard material, such as hard leather or wood or whatever, and a minnow is made out of soft leather, and also a minnow covers the foot more than a sandal does. So therefore, the sandal gozer be'rabbanan, the rabbanan only made the gzera when it comes to sandals. The minnow, like gozer be'rabbanan, the chachamim never made the gzera in the first place about minnow, about a shoe. Because again, it's only when it's ma'aseh shehaya, only when it's similar to the original story. Another question. Bominate of Abba Barzavda made of Abba Barabina. Asoi kimin talbus mahu. What happens if the nails on the bottom of it are made like talbus? So we actually had the word talbus yesterday in connection with one of a woman's pieces of jewelry, where Rashi had used the word to mean a piece of jewelry shaped like a crescent, like a semicircle. So here it means also the word clavus in Latin actually means a nail. But here we mean something shaped more like a staple. So you took a nail and bent it so it has two sharp ends pointing down, and you put such things into the bottom of a shoe. So now what would be the din? Are you allowed to wear it? So you have it. Again, you have like, you took the two sharp ends of the staple and stuck them into the bottom of the shoe, and you have the flat side of the staple sticking out. Are you allowed to wear such shoes on Shabbos, such a sandal on Shabbos? Omalei mutter, and Rav Abba Bar Avinah says it's mutter, again, for the same reason, because it's not like the original ones that the tragedy happened with. Ismar Nami, we said also, Amar Rav Yosef Rav Chanina, Sarikim and Kalbus Mutter, that if you made the nails on the bottom of it like a kalbus, you made them shaped like staples, then it's Mutter. Another din, Amar Rav Sheshes, Chipohu Kula B'Masmeres, what if you covered the entire bottom of the shoe with nails, Kadei Shalahite Kauka Echlatoi, in order that the ground doesn't ruin the wood of the shoe, like this, the ground could often be damp. And if you walk on damp ground with shoes that have wooden bottoms, then eventually the wood is going to rot away. So you put nails all over the bottom of it in order to preserve it. Then mutter. Then it's also mutter, because again, it's only usher when the nails are on there in order to strengthen the shoe, in order to hold it together. Not like over here where you're just doing it in order to protect the bottom of the shoe. Tanya Kava says Rav Sheshes, we learn a braisa like Rav Sheshes, lo yeter ish v'sandal amasumer, a person is not allowed to go on Shabbos out with a sandal amasumer, v'lo yitayim with bias for bias, actually it's not even to go out with it on Shabbos into the Shusar Abrim or whatever, it's even from one room to another in his house, after the mimita lamita, or even from one bed to another, from one couch to another in the same room, is also osur, because again we're saying the sandal amasumer is completely off limits on Shabbos. But the Tanakama of the Braita says it's not actually intrinsically mukta. So it is actually a keli. You are allowed to carry it on Shabbos. If you want to use it as a makeshift cover for a keli, the list must be carry on mita. Or if you have a bed that's wobbly and you want to use it to hold up a leg of the bed, but Rav Elazar, but Rav Shimon Oitzer, whereas Rav Elazar, but Rav Shimon says it's osur because he says it's completely mukta. continues the braisa. Noshu roiv mi masmeroy. So what happens if most of the nails fell out? The nishtaya bedalrehei, four or five nails are left. Mutter, that it's also mutter to wear it on Shabbos. But Rebbe Matur on Sheva. Rebbe, as we say, Rebbe allows up to seven. As I was going to ask before, Rebbe had said you allowed 13, so we'll get to that soon. Kipohu ba'or milamata. What happens, another din, the Braisa says, what if you wrap the sandal with leather from underneath? So underneath the wooden sole, you have leather. And then what you did is you attached it with nails that go from the top going through to the bottom. Then mutter. Then it's also mutter because, again, it's not like the sandal on the summer where it's the other way around where the heads of the nails stick out from the bottom. And here's the part that's relevant to what Rav Sheshet said. Here's the part that we've quoted before. I saw it in Klavus. If he made the nails in the shape of staples, or if he made the nails that have a very, very wide head, so not like a regular nail head, but rather more like a plate, or where they don't have heads at all, they're just like pegs. So here's the part that's relevant to Rav Sheshet. If he covered the entire thing with nails, in order that the ground doesn't ruin the bottom of the shoe, in all those cases, mutter, because in all those cases, it's not like the original sandals. So therefore, so we see what Rav Sheshet is saying, that if he covered the whole thing with nails, then it's mutter. Okay, so now let's analyze that braisa. So I'm going to ask Pagufa Kasha. You have a contradiction in the braisa. And Noshu Roy Masmeroy. So you're saying that most of the nails fell out, implying, and you know, you're allowed to wear it on Shabbos, implying Apagav the Nishtaru Beitruva, implying even though there were a lot of nails left, as long as most of them have still fallen out, then it's Mutter. So if, let's say, you had 25 nails in there in the first place, and 13 of them have fallen out, then it sounds like it would be Mutter. And then the Braisa says, if you have four or five left, then it's Mutter, implying more than four or five is also. So what is it? Rav Sheshet, like Kasha Nigmamu Kasha Neku. So Rav Sheshet says there's no contradiction. One case is talking about where the nails are cut off flush with the sole of the shoe. So in other words, the body of the nail is still inside there, but the head of it was chopped off and it's flush with the bottom of the shoe. And where's the other kind is talking about where they were pulled out. Now what's the difference? So Rashi brings two explanations. One is that if they were completely pulled out, then you're only allowed to have four or five, because any more than that, it's not so obvious that there were ever other nails in there in the first place. Therefore, you still have the limitation of four or five, as opposed to if they were cut flush with the bottom of the shoe, you can still see the nails are there. Therefore, it would be mutter even if you have a lot more of them, as long as most of them are gone. That's what Rashi says. That's an explanation from one of his Rebbeim, Rabbeinu HaLevi, and then he brings from Chaveri, from another one as Rebbeim, the other way around. That if most of them were pulled out, then it's mutter. But if they were cut flush, then it would be also if there's any more than four or five. Now, we said arba chomish mutter. We say four or five a mutter. So which is it, four or five? Hashka chomish shari arba mabaya. If you're allowed, even with five, does it need to be said if you have only four? Amar Rav Chista, arba misando katan, chomish misando gadol. So Rav Chista says what it means is if it's a small sandal, then you're allowed a maximum of four. And if it's a large sandal, you're allowed a maximum of five. We said the Rebbe Matthew. We said Rebbe allows you to have up to seven. The Rebbe Matthew on Sheva. So the question is, Valtanya Rebbe Matthew on Shloishas, right? Earlier on the Omud, we quoted a Braisa where Rebbe had said that you allowed up to 13. The answer is no, it's shiny. The difference is that there we're talking about a sandal that was uneven, where you needed nails on one side of it to hold up the lower side, so then Rebbe would allow you up to 13. But in a regular sandal where the whole bottom of it is flat, then Rebbe would allow you only up to 7. Okay. So the Gemara says, Hashi the Osis law. Actually, now that you have that answer, then you don't really have a problem with Rabbi Yochanan either. Before we asked why is Rabbi Yochanan saying only five, and we had to bring a brisa where Rav Nehoroi says five. No, you don't have to say that anymore. You could say the same thing. You could say the same thing. Nota shiny that Rav Yochanan would say. When do Rav Nosson and Rebbe, when does Rav Nosson allow seven and Rebbe allow 13 if the sandal is nota, if it's uneven? But if it's even, then Rav Yochanan would say that there's no reason to allow any more than five. So then he might agree with Rav Nosson, that Rav Nosson would say if it's nota than seven and if it's not nota than five. Who is the halacha like? We had in the Braita about the question of whether a sandal on the summer is mukta. We said the Chachamim said it's not intrinsically mukta. You're allowed to use it, for example, to cover a kevi. You're just not allowed to wear it. And Rav Shimon Elazar said it is completely mukta. So, Omer of Achadboi, by Masna, Omer of Masna, ain halacha could have laws of Rav Shimon. The halacha is not like Rav Elazar of Rav Shimon. The sandal on the summer is not mukta. So the question is Tita. Obviously, the halacha is not like him. Yochid v'rabim, halacha k'rabim. We know the general rule of achloikas of a yochid against the rabim, the halacha is like the rabim. So obviously, the halacha is like the chachamim. What's the chiddush? The answer is ma'u detaimim establish time of the Rabbalazib of Shimon Baha. Still, you would have thought that maybe Rabbalazib of Shimon's reasoning seems to be very logical over here, that if you're allowed to move the sandal on the summer, you may forget and start wearing it on Shabbos, and we don't want you to wear it on Shabbos. So therefore, Kamash Balon, therefore Rav Masna, or Rav Achadvei Bar Masna, had to tell us that no, that nevertheless the halacha is not like him, and the Chachamim are allowing you to move it around on Shabbos, they just don't allow you to wear it. Okay. One more thing on this topic, Amar Rav Chiya. So all this time we've been talking about various opinions, how many nails you're allowed to have in the shoe. We said, Rav Yechanan had said, and you're allowed to wear it on Shabbos. Rav Yechanan had said five, Rav Nosson had said seven, Rebbe had said 13. We said if it's not noted, it might be different. Amar Rav Chiya, so Rav Chiya says, Ilav dekoruli bavloi shori isuri. If it weren't for the fact that I'm afraid that if I do this, that if I do the following thing, people are going to call me the person from Babel who's master things that are usur, if it weren't for that, Sharin and Beit Tuba, I would actually allow many more nails to be in a sandal on a summer before you're not allowed to wear it on Shabbos. So in other words, he says, I disagree with all the other Tanoim above, that the maximum is 5 or 7 or 13. I would allow even more than that. But I don't want that they're going to call me the Babli who's master isurin. So Rav Chiya was from Babel. But Kama, so how many would Rav Chiya have been willing to be master? So Pumbedissa, Amrin, and Esrin, Ba'aba. In Pumbedissa, they said that Rav Chiya would have allowed as many as 24. The Surah Amrin, Esrin, Ba'aba. In Surah, they said he would have allowed up to 22 on each sandal. Amrav, Nachmizchok, Vesim Monach, so Nachmizchok says, a way to remember which one is which. Remember the following expression. Abd Asim, Pumbedissa, the Surah, Chosr Taji. By the time he went from Pumbedissa to Surah, two of them fell out. Meaning, in other words, imagine that the Rav Chiya moved from Babel and came to Eretz Yisrael and lived out the rest of his life there. The road to Eretz Yisrael passed through. You would go from Pumbedissa to Surah, and then from there you would go to Eretz Yisrael. That was the regular road. So therefore, imagine that Rav Chiya started out in Pumbedissa with a pair of sandal on the summer that had, let's say, 24 nails in each one. By the time he walks on the road to Surah, it's a long way, nails regularly fall out of such a shoe as you go along. So by the time, you could imagine, by the time he came to Surah, that two nails fell out. That helps you remember that in Pumbedissa they said he would have allowed 24, and in Surah only 22. Rashi also mentioned, the point is, that Surah and Choser, those two words resemble each other. They both have a samach, so that also helps you remember the fact that in Surah there would be some missing.
These shoes are not so far-fetched when it comes to Canada. In the winter, they have a lot of these special shoes that they put on, or a metal on their shoes to have these nails sticking that they should have. They shouldn't slip on the ice.
Right, that way they get a grip. That way they get under a grip on the ground more easily. Right. Right. So I don't know if the ones they make now. Well, first of all, nowadays so those aren't sandals; those are shoes. And we said before that the Xander doesn't apply to shoes, so therefore, yeah, there's no problem wearing them on Shabbos. But yeah, that's
right,
an example.
This would be like putting on rubber. They put on this piece on their shoe when they walk outside. You know, it has a bunch of pointy pieces of metal. Not even
right. Right. So that's what I was saying before. It's also similar to if you look up, for example, you look up a baseball player's shoes, for example, you'll find a similar thing where they have cleats sticking out of the bottom of them for the same reason, so they can grip the ground when they're running. So yeah, you have such things nowadays also. Yeah.
Clear.
Okay. Clear.
Thank you, everyone. Okay.